Meeting of the House Judiciary Committee will come to order. It is now 2:35 p.m. on Thursday, April 14th. We're in the Grunberg Room. Members present are Representative Lynn, Representative Foster, and Representative Clayman, and myself, Chair Ledoux. Please silence your cell phones. Thank you, Christy, for being our recording secretary today, and Matthew Kern from the Juno LIO for your teleconferencing support. On the agenda today, we have SB 165, sponsored by Senator Michicki. Mr. Kopp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Michicki. The senator is actually required to help move some bills right now in the other body, so thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing me to present this morning.
Thank you for being here. Welcome to House Judiciary.
Okay. Madam Chair, it's a real privilege to help move forward this measure, which we believe brings a very good balance to the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. It decriminalizes youth possession and consumption offenses. It keeps these offenses off of court view if they are not joined with any other criminal offense, and it puts in place proper accountability measures, opening up new horizons and opportunities for youth who are under 21 years of age who make a mistake consuming or possessing alcohol. Madam Chair, this is a product of an ongoing multi-year review which began in 2012 with a whole bunch of stakeholders from public safety, public health, law, and the industry coming together and looking at how do we address a Title IV, our Alaska alcohol laws that haven't been updated since 1980. Today we have breweries, we have craft brew beers, we have brewery to table, we have things, tastings that weren't even conceived of when we first drafted our laws. And in many ways, they are just outdated for the practice of the industry today. Right now, we have over 8,000 hours of stakeholder work into this group, which would be like 16 90-day legislative sessions. It's been a considerable effort by many folks. And the work is continuing even now to review our laws, how they relate to the licensees, the role of the board, underage drinking and internet sales that we plan to bring forward in a secondary bill this next year. The key features of this bill, Madam Chair, in the overview are the five-member ABC board structure. As you probably know, currently it has three public members, one representing rural Alaska, and two industry members. Under the proposition in this bill, it still retains two industry members, one public safety seat, one rural public member, and one general public member. And Madam Chair, we're pleased to say that this composition has the support of our diverse stakeholder group, which includes Alaska Char, the voice of the alcohol industry. The most significant reason the bill sponsor got involved with this was to address the under 21 alcohol status offense penalties that burden a youth's future ability to possess a driver's license, gain employment, join the military, take their first job, and an alcohol offense on record because you were 20 and not 21 can often stop that dead in its tracks. And the science and the data show that the minors do worse under this program, not better, and we'll get into that. So the stakeholders of our group, which do include public safety and prosecutors, identify the value of rehabilitation and punishment for young people, or rehabilitation over punishment for young people who are still developing values and forming their behavioral patterns, and the need to support success rather than contribute to barriers that promote failure. So it restores under 21 alcohol status offenses to true violations of law, removing them as criminal penalties, establishing a fine of $500, which may be reduced by the court to $50 if the person provides the court not less than 6 months after conviction with proof of completion of an alcohol safety action program or a community diversion panel, which would include youth courts and tribal circles, which often are more culturally relevant and provide far more successful outcomes. It provides that these simple minor consuming violations will stay off of court view, which has caused many youth to be denied employment opportunities. And it clarifies that youth are allowed to play and work on golf courses, which also serve alcohol, as long as certain criteria are met depending on the age of the minor. And then finally, Madam Chair, this bill requires background checks on marijuana establishment licensees, the same as is now required of alcohol licensees. And Madam Chair, in closing of the overview, we're very appreciative of Alaska Char, the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority, the Children's Trust, the Wellness Coalition, the Matsu Health Foundation, Providence Hospital, the Seward Prevention Council, Recover Alaska, and Rasmussen for supporting this work over the past 3 years. And I would note that the minor consuming law revisions are supported by the Alaska Peace Officers Association. So, Madam Chair, if you would like, I can skip the PowerPoint and go right to the sectional, whatever you want me to do, Madam Chair.
What's the pleasure of the committee? Does the committee wish to see the PowerPoint, or would you prefer that Mr. Kopp go straight to the sectional? I'm fine with straight for the sectional.
I'm fine with the sectional.
Unless anybody wants to see the PowerPoint. You're fine, too?
I'm fine.
We're good, Mr. Kopp.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, in Section 1 of the bill, it begins with what is currently a current law, the first five lines there, which you just established as the five members appointed by the governor and confirmed by a majority of the members of the legislature in joint session. That hasn't changed. If you go to page 2, Madam Chair, of the bill, this shows the new structure of the board with the two industry members, the one regular public member, one rural public member, and the one public safety member of the board. It further identifies definitions of how we identify immediate family member, what is public health sector, what's public safety sector, and gives definitions for a rural area and sets a population limit for that.
So Mr. Kopp, how does the composition of the ABC board, how does the composition under this bill differ from the previous compensation of the ABC board?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So previously, there were three public members. One of them needed to represent rural Alaska and two industry members. And now there are still two industry members again, one rural public member again, one general public member, and one public safety seat. So we've added a public safety designated seat to the board.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know where the person representing rural, where that person's from on that board currently?
Through the chair, Representative Foster, I do not know that.
Okay.
I do know that when the stakeholder group looked at the population and they made it so that rural area would include a population of 7,000 or less not connected by road or rail, the intention was to capture our largest rural areas like Bethel, which have pretty good populations, recognizing also that people sometimes will move into town to take a better opportunity to help serve their people back home. And we did not want to preclude someone who may be a real leader, but having maybe, so it's, you have to have been there physically within the last 5 years living to qualify as having rural representation. That way, someone wouldn't be disqualified because they sought a place of service elsewhere, and that also gives the board and the governor discretion to determine if they're still, in fact, connected to that rural area. Thank you.
Did you have a follow-up, Representative Foster?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I remember that issue came up in years past, the same issue where somebody may have lived in Bethel and then may have moved to Anchorage and was still serving. I think under that provision they could still serve. So they may have been living in Anchorage for 4 years, but that would still be within the 5 year. And I just remember that was a concern.
Yeah.
But I'll just take note of it for now.
So through the chair, Representative Foster, thank you for that. And also notice it says at the time of appointment or reappointment. So when they're reappointed, if they were beyond that 5 year window, that could be an issue then at that point.
Thank you.
So yeah.
Representative Christ Tompkins, it looks like you have a question.
Yes, thank you. The spirit of this question may be in keeping with the namesake of the room that we're sitting in and my predecessor on this committee, but I was looking at the definition or the parameters set aside, which I'm now furiously trying to find again on my iPad, for the rural member on the board and the definition for rural being 7,000 and not connected by road or rail to Fairbanks or Anchorage, mm-hmm. I believe. And this sort of marries a rather... dorky interest of mine from growing up, which was demography and populations. And Bethel's population is 6,000 in the 2010 census, 6,400 in the American Community Survey in 2014. And with population growth, actually probably could exceed 7,000 in the 2020 census and maybe therefore be inadvertently excluded as being part of rural Alaska. And so I'm just wondering if we might want to nudge that number up a little bit. And by doing so, I don't think it would inadvertently include any other community in the state.
Through the chair, Representative Christ-Tompkins, it is hard to project right now. There's a 1.5% overall state growth. I don't know how many years it would actually take to get, like you say, to that number. But, of course, the law is always subject to change. And from going through this Title IV review process and talking with the many stakeholders, including those from rural Alaska, I would love to see that recommendation come up through that process. You know, if they felt like there was a group, we would definitely be hearing from that group if they felt like they were being left out. But I think you bring up a point that populations change, the numbers change. And I think it's an excellent point. But I know that this number was already raised from the previous one of six. And it's got.
And Representative Christ Tompkins, this has been a carefully worked out compromise with the various stakeholder groups. And one never knows when one pulls a thread out what could happen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may continue, Madam Chair.
But actually, I have a question with respect to community.
Yes.
Here. So let's say you've got a community of, let's say, 7,000 or 6,500 people.
Mm-hmm.
That's a city. Means a city. Okay. But that city is in a borough. How does that work out exactly? Because maybe the borough has quite a few more people.
Yeah, so, Madam Chair, that's a very good question. If you look at line 27, it specifically says that city or an established village is located in a borough or the unorganized borough. So it's worded in a way to recognize that is probably how those would happen, is they would be from smaller governmental units inside larger ones. They identify. So the term community is broad. And it recognizes that it is a city. It says a city as defined in 2971-800, which is your first, second, third class and home rule, and then or an established village that is located in a borough or the unorganized borough. So I think looking back how the term community is used, it's just used when it's describing what a rural area is. So rural areas.
Kodiak, for example. How many people? I think the city of Kodiak probably has about 7,000 people, more or less. But Kodiak's in the Kodiak Island Borough,
right.
Which is, there are smaller villages that you get to by plane or boat. But you've got this whole community of Kodiak, which is really about 11,000 people, not including the villages. But then the city of Kodiak, I think, has only about 7,000 people. So would Kodiak, under this definition, assuming that I'm correct about the 6,500 people, would that fall under rural?
Madam Chair, I do not believe it would, because as a city, if the population was over 7, and I don't know, but if it was, I believe it would not.
If it was over 7, but let's say it's 6,500.
Then it would definitely.
According to Google, Madam Chair, 6,423.
Okay, so 64. Thank you, Representative Klayman. So Kodiak has 6,423 people, the city. But then you've got the borough, which is Kodiak. The city of Kodiak is within the Kodiak Island Borough. And the Kodiak Island Borough, I believe, has about 11 or 12,000. people, not including the villages, which are off the, you have to get to them by plane or
yeah.
or boat.
Yeah.
So would Kodiak qualify as rural under this bill?
Madam Chair, I believe it absolutely would, based on that it is a community and it's identified. It's a community unto itself, and it's identified as a city that's under the population limits. And I think all the individual cities on Kodiak Island, like you pointed out, would also qualify individually because they are so small.
All right. Thank you. Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In an effort to try to not unravel the thread, I understand the situation we're in with the end of session, but I'm also concerned about just going back and reading on the rural. It says, at the time of appointment, one member of the board shall have resided in a rural area within the previous 5 years. So technically, you could have somebody who lived in an area, rural area, 4 years ago and still be appointed and be representing a rural area. And I guess if I had written it, I might have instead have said, at the time of appointment, one member shall reside in a rural area. And then if they move, when they come up for reappointment, if they're no longer in that rural area, then they would not be reappointed because they don't fulfill that eligibility requirement. But with that said, I just wanted to put that out there, and I'll continue to think about that one.
Right.
So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Foster.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Foster. That discussion did come up in the work group, and I can tell you that the thought on that is that a person who was a real community leader who moves out of rural Alaska to take an opportunity to better serve rural interests, they would be disqualified if at the time of appointment, let's say you just moved out, and then this opportunity to serve comes up 6 months later, and the only reason maybe you moved out was to help serve, you know, your area. So that it was a discussion point, but thank you for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if I may continue, Section 2 and 3 are just drafting changes to conform to current style, changing the term chairman to chair. Section 4, Madam Chair, in fact, Sections 4 through 8 all deal with the title statute, access of persons under 21 to licensed premises, and it begins by amending 416.049A, adding a reference to 411.110, which is club licenses, permitting access to club premises by a person under 21 years of age. These are patriotic organizations, Madam Chair, where if no alcoholic beverages are present or if the person has an active duty military card, they can be on those premises. And it also changes age of 21 to 21 years of age to conform to current drafting style. And it identifies circumstances when minors may be employed on licensed premises. Madam Chair, Section 5 amends 416.049B, again, changing age of 21 years to the term 21 years of age to conform to current drafting style. Section 6 of the bill amends 416.049, still dealing with access of minors onto licensed premises, which allows juveniles who are 16 and 17 years of age to be employed on golf course licensed premises as long as they are not serving alcohol, have written consent of guardian or parent, and an exemption granted by the Department of Labor. Similarly, Madam Chair, in Section 7, dealing with minors now, 18 to 20 years of age, it allows minors to be employed within the licensed premises of a golf course, as long as they do not sell, serve, deliver, or dispense alcohol beverages. Section 8, Madam Chair, is amended by adding new subsections to permit access by minors to golf courses for the purposes of playing golf. It was recognized that when a beer cart goes around the golf course to deliver beer at the tees, technically the whole thing is a licensed premises. But when you have young people out playing golf, that could be a problem, and this is almost a cleanup provision in the law, kind of recognizing now that youth do play golf, and we needed to make sure that was clear in statute that they could still play golf. It also, Madam Chair, adds new subsections making unauthorized presence by a minor on licensed premises a violation punishable by a fine of $500, which must be charged and filed with the court as a separate case. Now, the fine may be reduced by the court to $50 for a person who has not more than one previous violation, or to $250 for a person who has two or more previous violations. if that person provides the court not later than 6 months after judgment of conviction is entered with proof of completion of an alcohol safety action program, a juvenile alcohol safety action program, or a community diversion panel, which we know as youth court or tribal circles. Madam Chair, Section 9 of the bill, this is the section that repeals and reenacts the minor consuming alcohol and makes it a peer violation, punishable by a fine of $500, which must be charged and filed with the court as a separate case. The fine may be reduced by a court to $50 if the minor supplies proof of completion of an alcohol safety action program or a community diversion panel. Section 10 of the bill modifies the required language for warning signs on licensed or designated premises. Section 11, Madam Chair, is the section that deals with court view, and this is a new provision which bars the court system from publishing on a publicly available website the record of a violation of under 21 on licensed premises or minor consuming alcohol or a similar municipal ordinance if the violation was charged separately and was not joined with another minor offense or criminal charge. Section 12, Madam Chair, is a definition, adding a definition for community diversion panel, meaning a youth court or other group serving as a sentencing option for a person convicted under this section. Section 13, Madam Chair, is what authorizes Department of Public Safety to obtain a criminal history record check of a person applying for a license to operate a marijuana establishment, just like the alcohol licensees are required to. And Section 14, Madam Chair, is requiring applicants for registration to operate marijuana establishments to submit to a criminal history record check, just like the alcohol licensees do. Section 15, actually, I think we are up to, that was Section 14. Section 15, Madam Chair, removes the reference to motor vehicle insurance being canceled for minor consuming alcohol violations. Section 16 speaks of the restriction on driver's license issued to persons under 18, and it removes the minor consuming alcohol nexus to driver's license. One of the goals of this committee was to remove the criminal penalties associated. These are non-driving offenses. If a minor is possessing alcohol and they are doing it in a vehicle and they're under an influence, they're actually cited for minor driving after consuming, or DUI, whatever is appropriate. But a minor consuming by itself is never a driving-related offense. And part of the work of this Title IV group was working with prosecutors who recognized that our system, as it is now, is really broken with applying driving penalties and driver's license revocations for non-driving offenses that cause kids to drop out of college, drop out of school, and it's very destabilizing in their life when those social institutions are taken away from them when we attach the driver's license. So this is one of the goals of the bill, is to remove the nexus to the driver's license on these penalties. Section 17, Madam Chair, continues. It removes the court requirement to notify Division of Motor Vehicles of the minor consuming conviction. Section 18 removes the reference to Division of Motor Vehicles not issuing a driver's license to a person whose license was revoked for minor consuming alcohol, which right now happens on a second offense. And Section 19, Madam Chair, speaks to the direct court rule amendment to Alaska Rules of Minor Offense Procedure, which lists an exception to when a prosecutor may join a minor offense with a related criminal offense under the circumstances. So the general rule is a prosecutor may join a minor offense violation with a criminal offense at the time a person is charged, but with this direct court rule amendment, a prosecutor may not join a minor offense of this minor consuming alcohol with another related criminal offense, and that's what keeps it off court view. Section 21 is a repealer, which repeals the various sections that have to do with denial, cancellation, or non-renewal of insurance for minor consuming violations, the court revocation of a driver's license for minor consuming alcohol, and health and social services agreements under delinquent minor rules to revoke a driver's license for minor consuming alcohol offenses. Section 22 is the applicability provisions, and Section 23 is the transition provisions relating to membership on the Alcohol Beverage Control Board. Madam Chair, I also have Carmen Franchino, who is an attorney who has been very much involved with the Title IV working group over the past 2 years. She is online and also available to help answer any questions the committee might have.
Carmen Frantino, I've got a Carmen.
I'm sorry, Carmen Gutierrez. Yes. Carmen Frantino is another attorney, but anyway, no, Carmen Gutierrez, yes.
And who else did you say is on the line that you wanted to refer the committee to? I can tell the committee who's online. We've got Sarah Clark from Division of Behavioral Health, Catherine Manfreda, Department of Public Safety, Carmen Gutierrez for the Justice Improvement Solutions, Jeff Jesse, the Mental Health Trust, and those are all for questions, and then we've got a couple of people online for testimony. Does anybody have any questions for either Mr. Kopp or the people that I've just mentioned? All right, then, with no questions, we're going to open up public testimony. The first person I have online is Robin Menard from the Matsu Health Foundation. Robin, you want to identify yourself, and then you may proceed.
You bet. Thank you so much, Representative Ledoux and members of the committee. My name is Robin Menard, and I serve as Director of Public Affairs at the Matsu Health Foundation. We share ownership in Matsu Regional Medical Center, and we invest our share of the hospital's profits back into the community to improve the health status of local residents. We conducted a community health needs assessment in 2013, which included data analysis, public polling, and 24 community forums. And consistently, alcohol and substance abuse were rated as the number one health issue in Matsu. In follow-up research, we asked our local police captains, what is the number one substance problem? Their response was alcohol, alcohol, alcohol. We support the Matsu Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, which uses what are called environmental strategies to reduce underage drinking in our community. An environmental strategy is one in which we change the environment that influences behavior. Classic environmental strategies include alcohol taxes, which we support increasing, policies that restrict the density of alcohol outlets, and policies that ensure swift and uniform enforcement. The Matsu Health Foundation is also a funding partner of Recover Alaska, which aims to reduce the harm caused by alcohol throughout the great state of Alaska. We support these environmental strategies. We also support SB 165 because it enables swifter and more uniform enforcement, which sends a much clearer message to youth. It provides an incentive through fine reduction to attend an alcohol education program, and it decriminalizes the action so that no one mistake can follow youth for their permanent record. Swift and uniform enforcement decreases underage drinking, and this has been an important strategy that has worked in many other states. We have to keep in mind alcohol is not an ordinary commodity like Matanuska-made milk or Alaska-grown carrots. It has a downside. It brings in some revenue, true, but it also has enormous costs associated with its use, from crime to violence to preventable death and injury. We're pleased that SB 165 adds a public safety representative to the ABC board. Thank you for taking this testimony today. On behalf of the Matsu Health Foundation Board of Directors, I urge you to help us recover Alaska by passing SB 165. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions? Well, again, thank you for your testimony. Next person online is Dale Fox. Dale, you want to identify yourself? Dale, are you on the line?
Hi, this is Dale Fox.
Hi, Dale. Do you want to identify yourself for the record, and then you can proceed?
Sure. My name is Dale Fox, and I serve as the president and CEO of Alaska Char. Char supports SB 165 as a result of some compromises that were made in the other body last week. I'm pleased to report that this bill now represents a number of major improvements for the state of Alaska. It provides for a balanced ABC board, a new attempt to fight underage drinking, as you've just heard, with sure and swift punishment, provides fixes to golf courses so that those under 21 can golf, a great game to get out and do, and it also provides the marijuana background checks that the marijuana folks say they need. One more thing that I'll add because of the question Representative Foster asked. Bobby Evans is the rural member serving on the Alcohol Beverage Control Board at this time. I'd encourage members of the Judiciary Committee to pass this bill so that it has an opportunity to become law this year. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dale. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions for Dale? All right. Again, thank you. Is there anybody else, either online or here in the committee room, that would like to testify? Seeing and hearing no one who wants to testify, I'm going to close public testimony. Do we have any further questions or discussions from the committee? Well, then, what is the pleasure of the committee?
Madam Chair, I prepared to move SB 165, version 29-LS1384/E of the CS for Senate Bill 165 from the House Judiciary Committee with individual recommendation and attached zero fiscal notes.
Seeing and hearing no objections to that, the bill is moved. Thank you, Mr. Kopp, and please tell Senator Machicki that I actually think this is one of the most valuable bills this session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I certainly will, and thank you.
As someone who once upon a time had teenage children, I always was kind of perplexed by some of the insanity in our alcohol regulations relating to minors, and this fixes a lot.
I had 16 years old.
No, and I'll just echo that, and it's very consistent with the efforts toward criminal justice reform that we've been working on. This, with pun partly intended, this addresses that at a minor level. And it's interesting, I got off the phone, my son turned 21 today, and I asked what he did. He went with some friends. He's in college. He went to a liquor store to buy liquor legally, and his friend is not a whole lot older than he is, but the noteworthy part was that, and it wasn't in the state of Alaska, but neither one of them was carded, and they were happy to sell.
So it is now 307. SB 165 is moved, and we stand adjourned for the rest of the day.
Amen.